Today's daf in Masechet Beitzah brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh is Daf Yud. And what we've been doing is the Gemara has been debunking, basically, in case after case, an overly simplistic approach to the Mishnayos, the contrast, the Das of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, whether it's L'Chomra or L'Kula, about the overly simplistic approach of thinking that the issue is how much we are willing to be Mako when it comes to the need for Simchas Yontev, or to be Machmer even if it means losing Simchas Yontev. So we've gone through basically all of the Mishnayos, almost, of the Perek we're going to still introduce another case today, in which there seems to be a contradiction between Beis Hillel's Shita and Beit Shammai's Shita in the opening Mishnah about whether you're allowed to shecht if you don't have the dirt that is available for Kisei Adam, and the other cases in which they seem to reverse their approach, L'Kula or L'Chomra, as the case may be between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel when it comes to Simchas Yontev. In, by doing this in each one of these Mishnayos, we've been able to isolate another factor that would spell the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel without its ever encroaching on the overall issue of Simchas Yontev. The last case that we had gotten to was the case yesterday of what we thought was a machlokas about the fear of people not doing shechita, if they wouldn't be able to put the hide down in front of places where people would be walking, and therefore the Gemara originally entertained the thought that maybe the heter to do so was a heter based on Simchas Yontev because we're afraid you won't shech. And in the end, the Gemara said no, that there's a completely different issue. The issue was whether it's chozgal or mizgalayo, that it was the norm to utilize these hides, just to sit down on the sand like a blanket that we put down on the beach. And because of that, it does not involve the overall question. That therefore would not be the place where Rabbi Yochanan said, let's change the gears. So I think what we got up to is Ela Ikasha Harkasha, which was basically 7 lines up from the Mishnah. Ela Ikasha Harkasha. So what actually pushed Rabbi Yochanan, this is our final take on like what in the world forced Rabbi Yochanan to say Muchlefet Hashitam. And that was perhaps this case, that Beit Shammai Omrim, you know those little booths that they have, there's still one on Rehov Kakal, where they would open up, they have these like little portable booths, and then you would open up the doors, and the doors could come down, they're like trusim, and the truce goes down, and then the guy inside, the one on Kakal, the guy was a shoemaker, he would sell the shoe polish and shoelaces and stuff like that. But this was very common, that you would lock up at night, pull up the trees, lock it, and then in the day you would open up the trees, and then the trees would become the counter for sale of, you know, if you're selling nuts, fruits, shoelaces, or junk, whatever it is. So that's the case that we're talking about over here. And there is a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about whether you're allowed to open and or close these trisim on Yontev. Now you'll ask, well, what is the guy opening his store up on Yontev? Anyway, people can't buy from him, and that's not true. They actually used to open the stores on Yontev, because if the person knows you and you don't mention anything about buying and selling, you just say, okay, I took a couple bottles of milk or whatever, so then you can pay after Yontev. So in order for people to be able to have supplies, so then they would open up, fine. So then, if this was the case, then the machlokas, where we say later on, you're not allowed to even open these trisim. And Beis Hillel says, not only can you open them, you can even put them back. Now, opening them, I understand, is directly the tzarech yontev, because people have to buy, but putting them back is really only incidentally if we don't allow the guy to lock up his store afterwards and he's not going to open it. So that's even a step further. Beis Hillel says, not only can you open it, you can even close it afterwards. So now apparently what that would imply is that Gabe Simchas Yontev, Beit Shammai is more machmer, and he says, look, if you're not going to have milk to buy on Yontev, that's too bad. You should have bought it before. In other words, we're not going to be mako in order to let people have an easier time getting supplies for Yontem, whereas Beis Hillel is saying, no, we have to take care and be maker in order to allow people to have it to Beis Hillel Kula. And then this would be the standard question. So now how do we explain the first Mishnah, where it's exactly the opposite, where Beit Shammai is the one who is matir, so Hashochet Chayava Ov Piyamtev, and so on and so forth. So again, we look for an alternative explanation to the Machlokas, because, I mean, to justify a change in the Girsa, it would mean that we don't have any other alternative. And it was based on this, just this difference. What are we going to do with the fact that we have other possibilities? So in this case, we take before Rabbi Yochanan comes along and says Mukhlefes Hashita, we actually first point out, now there is an answer, at least in one sense, because, I mean, Beit Shammai, we could say there's no contradiction. That's true, because the same way we've said every single case until now, so Bishlam Beit Shammai against Beit Shammai is easy to explain, because we know that the problem over there is addressed because of Deker Na'utz. And Deker Na'utz, according to Beit Shammai, means that there is no issue whatsoever, which, by the way, is not all that pasha, you know, because obviously the idea over there is that we were matir based on Deker Na'utz specifically in terms of Yantav. So there ought to be some connection to the issue of whether you're being Mekel Agave Yantav also, you know. Now, we'll have to say that over here in the case of Deker Na'utz, somehow or other, there would be no factor whatsoever when we come to the question of whether there's an issue of Mukhsa. It's considered to be entirely Mukha. Maybe there's reasons to be Machmer in other cases that are not specifically because of Yantiv, but this requires some thought. It's not an obvious kind of thing. But in any event, okay, however we understood it until now. So over there we're saying there's no issue according to Beit Shammai. But over here, there is an issue. I mean, whatever the issue is. Now, I mean, there may be a lot of issues. The issues might be Tircha Shelo Letzorech on Yantav. The issue might be Binyan. Maybe it's a question of Yesh Binyan Bekelem, Ain Binyan Bekelem, which we'll see later on. According to one of the Girsaot over here, is an issue. And later on, when we get to the Dachav Beis, we'll see that there's a problem about Binyan over here, Bekelem. But so that would mean that according to Beit Hillel, I mean, how come Beit Hillel is clearly taking a stand that is going to be matir, even putting back and closing up the store, and he has to consider that to be problematic because he wants to be makeup for Simchas Yantav, and yet when it came, even in a case where he had the Deker Na'utz, he wasn't ready to be matir. I'd explain that. And there, Rabbi Yochanan said it. Yeah, well, because of that, since I can't explain Beit Hillel, I'm going to have to reverse the Shitot, and that way it would work out. So then it would be Mukhlefet Hashita. Remember again, there's the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos in all of these cases, whether the Mukhlefet Hashita is on the local case of the tree Sim, which is the way Rashi understands it, or whether it's on the original case about whether you can shecht, which is the way Tosfos understands it. Okay, but in any event, here Rabbi Yochanan said, okay, so I got no choice, right? So Mechlepes Hashita asks the Gemara here also. Now, that maybe there is no actual reason to invert the idea. Now, the question over here, Inami. The Inami is not the Inami that we said, Inami Lebeit Hillel. But this is a normal Inami. In other words, before we get to this, there was another way of trying to answer the contradiction. What was the other way of answering the contradiction? I'll leave it at Beit Hillel. So this was a different version, namely that Ad Kan Lo Ka'amri Beit Hillel Hachal Mishum Da'ain Binyan Bekelim Da'ain Stira Bekelim Aval Hasam Lo. Now this seems to be a serious Girsa issue because definitely not everybody is Goris this, and it's Mashma also because of Rashi, who introduces the issue of Tircha Shelo Letzorech, doesn't initially mention Yesh Binyan Bekelim or Ein Binyan Bekelim. So this piece is apparently not here. And especially if we talk about the fact that we were Machlif, the original Girsa, which is what Tosfos holds. So it can't be that he had this Girsa and left off with there being no reason for Mukhlefes HaShita, because all along Tosfos keeps saying that there was Mukhlefes HaShita, and because of that, it seems clear that Tosfos didn't have that Girsa. The Rosh Beferish says that there's no such Girsa. So, I mean, basically, as far as the bottom line is concerned, the Pashtus of the way that we have the Girsa over here is that there is no reason to be Mukhlefes HaShita. And in fact, there are Rishonim that pasken like that, that we keep the gears of all the Mishnayos exactly as we had them, and that's where the Ran learns, that's where the Ramban learns, and that the Gemara in the end came out that there's no justification for Mukhlefes HaShita at all. Then we have Rashi's approach, that there is a Mukhlefes HaShita, but it's not a Mukhlefes HaShita about Shchita, it's a Mukhlefes HaShita about this particular case of the tree sim. And then we have the Tosfos' approach, which that the original Mishnah is Mukhlefes HaShita, which is the way Tosfos kept up the discussion all through the Shita. Obviously, it's going to have major differences in Psak, Legabe, whether we're Mata the Shita, even in a Mokum where you don't have Ephraim Bukhan.
Rabbi, the scarce on the side, Dilma Lohi, is like the ones that are saying that maybe there's no reason to be switching the Shita?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's how I read it. Okay, it's time for Sir Richard to appear once again in one of his rare cameo appearances. So, thank you. So we've been taking for granted over here that all you need to worry about is how to move your ladder when it comes to taking down these pigeons. The problem is that we've got a muktzah issue. I mean, basically, remember that we're talking about over here birds that you did not raise. These dovekots are actually, as we said before, there's going to be a problem of tseda even, because if they can fly, because they're not yours, they're not growing with you in the home. These are not the type of doves that grow inside in your aliyah, which is a completely different din. But if you've got a shovach, so then if they can fly, you've got a problem with seda. And that's what I said before. We're not talking about the ones that can actually fly. And if not, you still have a problem of muktzah, because right now they are not mukhan for you to be using. So how exactly do you get around the muktzah problem? So Beit Shammai says, well, what you have to do is you have to make sure that they're not muktzah already on Erev Yontif. And if you didn't do what I'm about to tell you, you have to do, then you're not allowed to take them down on Yom Tov. So lo yitol, don't take down those pigeons. Elin kein niana mi ba'od yom. You had to go up there, Erev Yom Tov, and pick up the ones you want, hold them in your hand, and say, you is dead meat. Because I'm going to be eating you tomorrow. Now, if that doesn't prove that that pigeon can't fly, because I mean, after hearing that, it would certainly fly, right? So obviously, at that point, he's already chosen it, and that is defining that it's not muktzah. So there's no problem. Beit Hillel says, well, what do you have to actually handle it for? You don't have to handle it. Muktzah is just a function of the state of mind, right? So all you need to do is you go up there, and you say, okay, I'm going to be taking that one, I'm going to be taking that one, I'm going to be taking that one. Why would you have to actually pick it up and hold it? Amar of Chana Ba'ami, let me explain what we're talking about over here. To all of those who don't breed pigeons, I'm not sure yet whether Ira has got himself a shovach. Well, when's the shovach coming, Ira?
I don't know, but whenever I do it, it will be built out of an old IKEA bookshelf.
Of course. So I guess it's just a question of when the next IKEA bookshelf needs to be replaced. Okay, so remember the way these shovachs work in order for us to get a real sense of what's going on over here. First of all, we try to make these birds as comfortable as possible because we would like them to stick around so that when we get hungry, we can climb up there and get them, you know? So how do we do that? So the first thing we do is we make them feel that they're in Williamsburg. And Yonim love Williamsburg, so we make a tenement for them, right? So the way we make the tenement is that we've got this big apartment building, essentially, And every unit is the same as every other unit. But, you know, but we make it people, I mean, Yonim, feel comfortable in it. So we put their name on top, you know, put a little doorbell on the thing. And we put a little porch in front, as we're going to explain. And what we also do is we let the first, now the way these Yonim work, remember that Yonim are standing for Klal Yisrael, right? So because of that, they're very makbid on being involved in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world to proceed. Now, what's the chiyuv of a period of a rivya? You have to have one zocher and one nekeva. So these yonim have every single month of the summer, one zocher and one nekeva. In the winter, it's too cold, but this is what they've got. Now, so that's called a brecha, male-female birds. And what we would usually do is we would leave the first brecha. Because if mommy sees that nobody's hanging around, she may go look for better quarters, even if we do have a very nice personalized, I don't know, but at least it's private, you know. So she may leave. So in order to encourage mommy to hang around, we always leave the first brecha, the first brood we leave with the mother. So that's what we're talking about over here, it says Rav Chana Bar Ami. We're talking about the brecha rishona. Because Beit Shammai holds, since you're very reluctant to take the fruit of the first brecha, so if you haven't actually handled them, what we're afraid of is that just saying that you is dead meat, that's not going to be enough. Because when you actually come and you pick up this poor little pigeon, or is it coo coo, I can't do it. I can't bring myself to do it. So, okay, so then you may end up doing all of your tiltel shelo letzarech, because you may change your mind because you're really reluctant to get rid of that first brecha anyway, right? Whereas Beit Hillel says, no, it's not a problem. Once the guy has selected, he's selected. Lo gazrina. Avol brecha shniya. I mean, if basically what you're looking at is the standard birds that you would be taking anyway, there's no reluctance to take them. So then everybody agrees with Beit Hillel. All you need to do is to say, okay, I'm going to be taking this one and this one, and that's enough to take off the muktzah. And let me ask you something. I had another problem. Okay, I understand now the issue of the Beit Shammai. But I mean, even according to Beit Hillel, do you really need to define the exact birds that you're taking? I mean, can't you just say that I'm going to be taking birds out of here? So then that means that you were making, obviously you weren't making all of them, because you're not going to be using all of them. But then when you choose the ones that you choose, since this whole thing is a derabbanan, it's mukta, so we should be able to rely on brera. So this one that I end up taking tomorrow is now huvrara davar mitchila. So retroactively, I can say, this is the one that I meant when I said that I'm going to be taking from here tomorrow. These are the birds that I ended up taking. So what do we have to make him climb up on a ladder and point exactly to which ones he wants? Let him just say, I'm going to take from here. V'chi teima Beit Hillel let leh breira. Maybe you're going to try to tell me that, well, I mean, obviously if Beit Hillel is makbid that you have to select a specific bird, he clearly doesn't hold that you can retroactively define what those birds were, right? Wrong. Because after all, anybody learning Beit Hillel will just have finished Masechet Ohalot, and remember that we had back in Ohalot, as it says, Vatnan, Hamet Babayit Velo Ptachim Harbe. Remember the issue that was called Sof Tuma Latzet. Sof Tuma Latzet was an interesting gezerah that the Rabbanan made, so that the classic situation, Baruch Avram, welcome back. So the Sof Tuma Latzet, the classic situation that you have over there is that someone has died in a house, and the house has multiple doors, windows, and so on, all of which are either closed or open. Now, if all of them are the same, so then there is no way for us to define, well, undoubtedly they're going to remove the mace through door A or door B, because all doors are the same. The moment we open up a door, if one of the doors is open, so then, okay, then we understand that that's where they're going to be removing the maid from. The difference is that the Rabbanan goes that wherever Tuma will ultimately be moved through, that area is considered to be Tame now, as if it's under the same roof as the maid. So let's imagine that a person has Kelim, under the doorway, but which is not under the actual roof of the house. So then in that case, if the door is one of the doors that is possibly the Sof Tumelat Seit, so then all of the Kalim that are under that doorway are going to be Tumet. Now, the question is, of course, what happens after we end up defining that we want to remove the Mate from a particular door? So then would we say Brera to remove the Tuma retroactively? Because now it turns out that the Tuma was removed through door B and not through door A and C, right? That's the question. That's what we think the question is. Okay, so the Mishnah said over there, Vatna, Hamet Babayit Velo Ptachim Arpe. So we have this door that are all the same. So even if they're all closed, the point is that all of the entranceways under the doorway is Tameh, and anything, any Kalim there are Tameh. But the moment that we open up one of the doors, then that door is Tameh, and all the rest of the doors are Tahor. Because, I mean, it's clear that if we're going to be removing the mace from the Bayit, so then this would be the door through which we would remove the mace. Now, everybody agrees to this statement, because this statement could simply mean that from this point forward, it has nothing to do with Brera, from this point forward, the only problem that we have is if Kalim were brought under the single door that we end up opening. Okay, that's not a problem because I did a Maisa, I opened the door, I didn't just think about it, and we're only talking about Mikan al-Haba. So that much the Mishnah definitely covers. I mean, I don't know, maybe it covers more than that, as we'll see. But certainly, this case is definable according to any possible Shita. If one of the doors is open, then from that point forward, for sure, that's the door that's going to be Sof Tumelat Seit. Now, the question is like this. How about if he just thought, Chashav lo tzio me'achad mem, suppose the Chevra Kedisha guy decides, you know what, I think the best thing is, we'll remove the mace from this door, because we can bring up our rechev to that door, or to a particular window. Remember that we learned also in Olos that a window that is Arba'at Vachim is also a window that we would use, and as long as it's for Tvachim, so if we open up that window, but what about if we just think about that window, Sheyesh bo Arba'a l'Arba'a, then just thinking about it is going to be matzil all of the doors and all of the other windows. Because now we say that just by thinking of it, you already defined which one it's going to be. Now the question is, does that mean retroactively? Or does that mean from this point forward? When did you think about this? Did you think about it before the guy died, so it never became tameh? Or did you think about it after he died? This guy was in dire shape, so we were thinking about, oh my God, what are we going to do to get him out of here? And before he died, we had already defined in our minds what it is that we're going to be doing. Whereas Beit Hillel says, no, even after he dies. So now what we assume that is meant over here, that it's a question not from this point forward, it's a question about even retroactively. And we thought that what was meant was that according to Beit Hillel, if you thought about it after the guy died, then that removes the tumah that had been there before, and any kalim that were there all of a sudden magically become tar. How do they become tar? Because Brera is retroactive. So now it turns out that this was not Sof Tumah, let's say. Okay, so then those Kalim weren't Tameh. But if that's what it means, so then that would be a clear indication that obviously Beit Hillel do hold a Brera. Okay, says the Gemara, yeah, that's okay if that's the way you want to learn the Mishnah, but remember that Rabbah has said that no, that is not what we're talking about over here. Ha'itmar Allah Amar Rabbah, that the discussion is whether we could be metaher the ptachim mikan al haba. Nobody was talking about whether retroactively you can make kalim that were tamei tahar. The question over here was that according to Beit Shammai, just like generally speaking, we say tuma is yored b'machshava, but it's only ola through a maisa, right? So over here, if you didn't actually open the door, the rabbanu did not take off the sof tuma let's say status. That's the question. Nothing to do with Breira. And according to Beis Hillel, from the point forward that you decided that you're going to be using a particular door, the other doors are not Sof Tumah, let's say. But that has nothing to do with removing the Tumah that had existed up until this point, and therefore it is not retroactive and is irrelevant to the whole question of Breira. So forget about it. The way, at least the way that Rab explained it, has nothing to do with it. V'chein omer v'yoshaya, l'taheret ha'ptachim mikan al haba. So what that would mean is only mikan al haba, not l'mafreya. Rava says, no, of course, I mean, the Mishnah is very clearly talking about l'mafreya. And it is absolutely correct when you said that the idea over here is that it's clear that Beit Hillel does hold of Breira. All of that's true. But it's irrelevant to our discussion, because even though really Beit Hillel does hold of Breira, it doesn't define our Mishnah. The reason in our Mishnah that Beit Hillel says you must point to the birds, bring a ladder, all this tircha, Erev Yantav, point to the birds, is not because he doesn't hold of Breira. It's because, let's imagine the situation. A guy says on Erev Yantav, I will be taking birds out of this. Okay, what does he do on Yantav? So then he goes in and he picks up a bird and he looks at it and says, oh, anyway, this one is not really very, very fat. Puts it down, picks up another bird. This one looks, actually, this one doesn't look so good either. Let me check over there. He ends up picking up all of the birds, which are all mukta, until he finally decides which is the one that he wants. And therefore, unless he's actually defined for himself, look, it's bird number 32 and bird number 40. How the heck does he know which one it is? Okay, I guess there's a way to clearly identify them. Ira, do all the birds look alike? Do all the sheep look alike? Absolutely not, right? But I mean, you've got to be a bird man to know that. So anyway, this guy is going to choose his birds. So then he's not going to do that. But
I think each one goes to its individual niche in the rocks.
No, of course.
So you know which niche it was. It's a niche 312, I don't know.
Of course, we're going to see in the next mission. That's the whole discussion. I'm kidding around. So over there, he's going to be metalto midi de lochazile. He's going to be carrying things that he never was meyachet. Excuse me? But you said he could just point to it and say, I'm going to take that one. I mean, so then tomorrow, when he comes over there, he may now look at it more closely and say, oh, I don't like that one. I want to take another one. So that could happen anyway. No. Because here the words Hane Mile mean literally Hane Mile. Doesn't mean that's only. These words is what the literal meaning is. These words of Beit Hillel have to be said on Erev Yantav. That's the point. So then in saying that, he defined for himself everything else is Muksa. So he's not going to be going and handling. But if he left it open for the determination of today, then he is going to be handling. That's the point. And that is the big difference over here. Avo B'yantav, it's going to be Yantav. And actually, once that's true, if I leave it to Yantav, there's what might happen over here is he'll turn out, he'll pick it up, and he'll see. Zimnid mishtak kishmenim kushim, what he thought. He thought, oh, wow, those look like nice fat birds. And then when you get up close to them, it turns out it was all fluffy feathers and stuff. So then he's not going to be using them, or vice versa. Some of the birds that look very kachush, when he gets closer to them, he'll find kachush and b'shmenim. And in the end, as I said, he's going to be carrying a bunch of stuff that was never roy for him. Or there's another possibility. Because basically, if he's made a decision, I'm going to be taking this and this bird, he will take this and this bird. But if you leave it open for him to decide on Yantav, then he may take no birds. Why? Because he'll go in there and he'll, you know, it looked like it was going to be some nice birds in there. And then, this is the psychology of people. That if you need to make that choice and you don't like what you see, then you don't make any choice. And you basically say, oh, the heck, this is all garbage. Anyway, so in the end, he won't have any birds to eat. But once he's already committed himself that he's taking this one and this one, he doesn't think about it anymore. So then he doesn't get depressed. He just takes what's there and he shafts it and he uses it. That's a very beautiful insight. So it could be that he'll find all of them are being kosher, kulo kosher, and then he won't take anything. Once he made the decision, so then there's no longer any talking about it or thinking about it. These are my birds. It just goes, it sort of automatically and mechanically takes those birds and he uses them for yantav. So at least they'll have something or other to eat for yantav, which is lovely. And now we have another very special moment with Alfred, with Richie at this cameo appearance. Now, one easy way of knowing the difference of what it is that you selected is if you're very racist. So the guy selects only black pigeons because black is beautiful. He wouldn't be caught dead with a white pigeon anyway. And he comes back tomorrow and somehow or other all the pigeons are white. You know, he selected white pigeons and somehow all of the pigeons are black. Or what if he had selected two pigeons and now all of a sudden there's three pigeons where there were two pigeons? Now, something is fishy. So because of that, they're all usser. Even in the case of it, obviously if they're the wrong color, they're usser because that's not what he had selected. But even in the case where he finds an additional one, since he doesn't know which one it is, and he's got one that's muktza, so then he's got to worry about using the muktza one. And what about, I mean, so why don't we say it should be batel berov? So that, remember, we're talking about a davar sheyesh lo matirin, and there's also the shita that balei chayim are choshev, and balei chayim are einam betelim. There's reasons why we won't be batel berov. Fine. But in any event, in these cases, there's no way that you could use them. Now, suppose you find the pigeons, instead of inside of their little unit behaving the way pigeons should behave, suppose they're on the porch. Now, one of the ways that we make these people, these pigeons in tenements, believe that they have a quality of life is by providing them a porch so they can persuade themselves, I'm still part of the earth. Now, these birds, I mean, can you imagine a bird who can never get out on the porch to sun itself and relax, as Rashi says. I mean, well, you know, what's the bird going to do when it feels it needs a little bit of a airing out? You know, so it's got to have a porch. Okay, so every unit has a porch, and fortunately, they don't have the Williamsburg problem over here because it does not have to be a sukkah porch. So even though there's a porch on top, that's fine. So they go out now to the porch, and now you find them on the porch. So then you can't be sure that they're the same ones that were inside, because we'll see why. The Rashi says this is R&R. You know, every bird needs to have R&R. Remember, we're doing a really good job to make these birds comfortable so that they stay. And however, says the Mishnah, im ein shom elahem, if there were no other birds around, so then, okay, this must be the same bird that was in the house, came out to the porch. Now, we'll see why we don't want to say that. It seems pretty obvious that would be the case, right? Now, as far as the first part of the Mishnah is, I mean, obviously, if you were miyachet black and now it's white, I mean, how would I think I could eat that on Yontif? I mean, certainly it didn't change its color. Omar Rabba, no. The case is that Achim Ayaskin and Gonshizime Shechorim Vilavanim. The point was over here that, look, I mean, this is a segregated building. I mean, for heaven's sakes, the black area is black. The white area is white. Come on. I mean, we're not gonna mix our colors. But what happened is he gets up the next morning and he finds that, you know, these were like woke pigeons. And so the white pigeons are in the black area and the black pigeons are in the white area. Now the question is, are you allowed to eat woke pigeons on Yom Kippur? That's not the problem. The problem is, can we assume that they simply switch places? So the Mishnah is telling me, you might have thought, okay, probably they switch places. These are probably the same birds. I mean, what are you going to say? That they both flew away and other birds came around. Therefore, the Mishnah says, no, that you have to consider the strong possibility that actually your original non-muktzah birds have flown the coop, and these are actually other birds completely. Now, what does this really involve? It seems to involve the question of rov and korov. Because obviously, most of the birds that are going to fly in here, if they come from somewhere else, are muksa, for sure. But the ones that were closest were the ones that were not muksa. So now what you're telling me is that I should forego the karev, and I should say that I have to worry that these are other birds, so that because of that, they're muksa. But essentially, it's all very nice to talk about this in just in general terms, but technically speaking, you're really dealing with the question of rov the karev. So do I go in, and remember that the Torah sometimes tells us to go baser karev, like by Egla Rufa, in other places it tells us to go baser rov. If I have both, which one takes precedence, la halacha, in terms of deciding where I have a right to be tzemach or to be chayish? Sorry. So the Mishnah seems to be going a little bit to Rabbi Chanina, because Rabbi Chanina says that when you've got the definition, remember, this is not just loose concepts. You have a definition of rov, and you have a definition of karov. You go according to the rov. This is a big machlokas above the pasuk. Fine. It's not our sugya over here, and there's lots of riots that are brought back and forth. Rabbi Chanina holds that rov comes first. So over here, you're telling me in the Mishnah, rov comes first, because you said you need to worry that these birds come from somewhere else, and rove birds are muksa, instead of saying, why would I think they come from somewhere else if the next door neighbor was black and now it's in this one? I mean, does it make more sense? So apparently it does not, because of the halachic principle, says the Gemara. No. In the end, we're going to see that the whole problem over here is the porches. You see, now those porches, remember that when these birds sit on the porches, it's not just for their own rest and relaxation, because what do people do on porches? Well, people do on porches is, it's not R&R only, they like to watch the people walking by, right? So then it's basically, it's where it is that you engage in a little bit of social interaction. Okay, now these poor birds living in William, in their dovecot, so they need social interaction too. The porches actually attract birds that are flying by. So the birds see this porch, but that looks nice. Let's take a little rest. Now they don't go into the actual pigeonhole because it says on top private property. And Mr. Dursley never saw a bird reading. Actually, that's not why. But Rashi says it's because of the fact that they're scared, because remember, the birds are territorial. And if you try to invade their private little pigeonhole, then they'll drive you out, because everybody loves their own little pigeonhole. I mean, every bird loves their own little pigeonhole, right? So nobody, I mean, no other bird can get in there. Okay, so then that means out on the front porch, you've got birds from all over the world that are coming to sit down and discuss the news and so on and so forth. So then if that's the case, it's all about karov anyway, because it's not just a matter of the next door neighbor coming in. How do we know that one of those birds that had settled down on the front porch, when he sees the couple of whites that had left the house, he just moves in with his black wife, and now you've got blacks in where the whites were, and vice versa. So it would be a karov also, and therefore does not prove that we've got a contradiction between the rov and the karov. Now the next case of the Mishnah was where you had two, and now you find three, and we said it's all usher. Because, look, what do you want to say? Manifshah. If these are other ones, then obviously they're all others. And even if they're not other ones, in other words, two remain, but you've got one that is mu'urav, and you have no idea which one it is, and therefore you have no way of using any of them. And even though this is a very chashuv v'nekuda that we had back at the beginning of the Masechet, that even though Safek Rabbanan Lakula, and therefore we should have been able to be Mekel Lagabi Muksa, where we have cases of Safek, we are bedafka when it comes to muksa, we treat it l'chumra. You remember that was a yesod, that muksa is so fundamental that we give it even chumras in cases of sveikas very often. Okay, so therefore we understand why that would be also. The next case, where there were three and there are two, then you can assume that the two that are left, that those are definitely okay. Why? Because we're assuming that one went away. Now we've got a problem over here. This way Marshall explains the issue. We've got a problem over here in a contradiction of Piske Halachas. Because normally the Psak Halacha goes according to Rebbe, only where Rebbe Shita argues with one person, Michaviro, but not Michavirav. So if the Rabbanan argue with Rebbe, then we would paskin with Rebbe. However, the other issue is that we paskin like a Stam Mishnah. And this Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, and that leads us to the following contradiction. Because the Mishnah that is saying we can assume that the birds that are left behind are the original two out of the three birds, and therefore they're not Muktzah. Baruch Avro, you there? So therefore they're not Muktzah. So that would only be going according to Rebbe, because we have the same case in the Braita about somebody puts in 100 zuz of Meiser Sheni in a box. And he comes back and he finds that there are 200 zuz. And how did it get to be 200 zuz? And he doesn't remember putting another 100 zuz there. So then we assume, okay, so apparently chulun Meiser Sheni muravim zeh bezeh. So since this is what Rebbe holds, since we've got an extra one, so okay, he can assume somebody put in an extra one. He doesn't remember putting it in. And what you've got is a mixture. So what you do is you take the nicest coins and you're mechala the less nice coins in the event that it was not the nicest coins that were the Meiser Sheni. You're mechala the Meiser Sheni on the nicer coins. So now you have the best coins are now Meiser Sheni and the rest is chulin. But the Chachamim say, what do you like? Look, nobody mixes Meiser Sheni money with chulin money. You must have taken away the original Meiser Sheni money and you don't remember, and this is all other money. This, why should we assume this is Meiser Sheni money? This is chulin money. And in the opposite case, where you're left over 200 of Meiser Sheni, you find 100. So Rebbe says, okay, this is our case now, right? So Rebbe says, you can assume that 100 of the original 200 is still left, and it's Meiser Sheni, Rebbe. But the Chachamim say, no, you can assume even the Kula, you can assume that all of this is new money and it's all chulin. So then in our case, if you had three birds, and now you've got two birds, then you have to assume, according to the Chachamim, certainly the Chumra, that none of these birds are the original birds. So then this would mean that our Stam Mishnah is going like Rebbe, but the Chachamim, and with Halacha is like a Stam, but the Chachamim are arguing with Rebbe, and the Halacha should be like the Chachamim. So like, what's going on? Says the Gemara, no, it could work out even our mission like the Rabbana. Because of Itmar Allah, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, they both explain there is a slight difference between birds and money. And that is that even though in our own experience, we don't see this because the money seems to hop away the same way the birds do, but it appears that there's scientific evidence for the fact that birds will hop away, but money does not walk away on its own, believe it or not. So this has apparently been definitively proven. And because of that, don't you think that there is an obvious difference? I mean, if you're missing a bird, there is a good reason to be missing a bird. But if you're missing money, how the heck did the money walk away? So somebody must have come. Okay, so once if somebody came, so then that's good for the point. I remember saying, once you're going to have to conclude that someone came over here, then you just assume he walked off with all the money, not that he mixed school and advisor, and that this is other money to be used with something else. This is what Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Elazar says. Gozolot are different because gozolot will hop around. And therefore, maybe one of the birds hopped right out. Therefore, the Mishnah works out. Why in the world would Bedavka Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Elazar be the one to say this answer? Oh my gosh. That's crazy. They're Dafka the ones that should never have said this answer. Because Lomali Lishanuya Lashani Gozolotolavasi in the Dabas. Could you tell me why they made it necessary to give that answer? Because, I mean, certainly both of them can't need that answer, because we know that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, one of them said that the machlokas between, we don't know which one. Okay, fine. But definitely one of them said that the machlokas between Rebbe and Rabbanan is only talking about where you've got two separate wallets in there. One of them is Meiser Sheni, and one of them, the other one is in a different, the other 100 was in a different wallet. But if it was all in one wallet, everybody is made it. Obviously, the money was taken away. And the other one says, actually, the machlokes between Rebbe and the Rabbanan are talking about whether it was only one wallet. But if there are two wallets, then the opposite. Everybody would agree that we need to assume that one of them was still there. Now, if you're going to tell me that the machlokes was only in the case of two wallets, right? So then, according to the Ma'an Yomar, that the machlokes is dafka in the two wallet case, b'shnei kisim machlokes. So then that is why I understand this case over here is two separate birds is the equivalent of being two separate wallets. Okay, so that Ma'an Yomar would need to answer over here that, well, gozalot are different than wallets because they hop around. But according to the Ma'an Yomar, I don't know which one it was, but definitely one of these two Amorayim, according to them who say that the Machlokas is only where it was one wallet, but if it's two wallets, everybody would agree to Rebbe. There's your answer. Two gozalot are the same as two wallets. So in that case, both Rebbe and the Rabbanu would agree that the idea over here is one remained and the other one is gone. And that's what we have over here, two wallets. Even if the wallets don't hop around, that's still true. Even if somebody else got involved, that's still true. So why would we say it's talking about over here hopping around? I thought you said, Amit Bishneki Sim Lo Pligi. And therefore, why would both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar have insisted that we're talking about over here hopping as opposed to non-hopping? Omer Vashi, I'll tell you why. Because you were overly simplistic. What we were talking about over there, they were talking about birds that were tied together and wallets that were tied together. And therefore, that's what we were talking about. We weren't talking about literally two wallets, one wallet or two wallet. We meant one wallet, meaning the two kisim were tied to each other, and two would mean that there are two that were not tied to each other. That's why we have to say that gozalot, because of the fact that they hop around, they also pull apart the whatever thread it was that was holding them together, whereas wallets don't pull each other apart. Whereas, and now the question would be that according to the pshat that the machlokes between Rebbe and the Rabbanan is talking about in the case where there would be two that would be tied together. So what does Rebbe say? If they were tied together, so then why in the world does he assume that one is munach? So Rebbe says, because it can happen that kisim nami, Zimnim, there are times, demit achel kitrayu. And listen, it gets damp, it gets wet, and the knot gets loose, and maybe one was taken and one was left, even in the case of wallets that were tied and now they're not tied. Let me just do this next case over here. Betoch hakein, umatzu lifnei hakein asurim. So we said in the Mishnah, again, that if you had said, I want the pigeons inside, and then you found them outside, so then, and there's nothing inside, then it's usher. Again, this is a raya that rove a karav. I mean, doesn't it make sense to you that the birds that were inside had come out to the front porch? So now why are you chashish that these are other birds? I mean, it's the most natural thing in the world that's why we made the porch, for heaven's sakes, was to allow the birds to get a little rest and relaxation out on the porch. So now if they come out on the porch, now you have to be chashish that they came from somewhere else. That's a tremendous riot to Rabbi Chanina, who sells rov v'korav alachachar rov, because since there's a lot of birds that are flying around, so most of the birds in the world are certainly not the ones that you would set aside to eat. Amar Abaye, this is where Abaye gave his answer. What we're talking about is on the porch, on the daf, and therefore these birds that are settled on the porch could have come from anywhere. So they are also korav, not only the problem of ra. Rava says, look, I'll tell you, the Mishnah could be talking about two units that are directly one on top of the other. So that, let's say he was miyachid one of these units before. On Yontav, both units are empty, but there are some actual pigeons that are sitting on the porch in front of the one that I chose. That's what it's talking about. So over there, we're afraid that they came from the wrong place, because since we have two issues over here, first of all, the ones that I said are not in their place at all. Besides that, both units, the one upstairs and the one downstairs, are empty. Now that makes me very suspicious. Why are they both empty? So isn't it possible that the upstairs neighbors have been eyeing that porch down there, and it looked good for a long time, so they came jumping down and took over when the other ones went? Okay, so then that would be the case, because we've got two issues over that make us suspicious, and it's not because of the Rov and Korov, but it's because we're afraid that they came from the neighbor that was eyeing the porch, which is also Korov. That's the point. And this works in both directions. You don't have to be the upstairs neighbor. That downstairs neighbor also would try to get the upstairs neighbor's porch, because porches are always greener on the other side of the tenement. So because of that, Lomi boizi main betachtona velo zimein be'elyona umatzah betachtona velo matzah be'elyona da'asirin. Not only are we talking about a case where you had chosen the lower story and not the one in the upper story, and then on Yontif it turns out that they're on the porch in front of the lower story, and there were no birds at all in the upper story. We're over there, I would assume, that the original owners of that porch have flown away to Florida. And the ones upstairs, they went down and they fell to onto that porch. But even in the other direction, even if the ones that you were going to eat on Yontif were the ones on the second story, and not the ones that were on the lower story, and you find them now on Yontif, you find them both on the upper story porch, and you don't find anything at all, not in the pigeonhole, not on the porch of the lower, we still are going to answer it, because we still think that these guys disappeared, and these went and jumped up, even though they're not really flying ones, we're going to talk about tomorrow, but these guys jumped up and they could reach that upper shelf. Okay, so in other words, even though it's not the norm, we have to consider this and it doesn't involve us in Rov and Korov. Anyway, yes. So, gentlemen, I've run out of time, unfortunately. Unless, of course, you don't mind. And then we could continue, and then I could get up to the Mishnah if you give me another couple of minutes, I think. So, should we do that? Do I get an okay? Okay. All right. So I've got an okay. So now we've got the very last words, which can bring us up to the next Mishnah. Im ein sham elohein, if there are no other birds around, then these are the birds. Okay. What are we talking about? I mean, are we talking about birds that can actually fly? Or even if you want to tell me they can fly just a little bit, so they're not considered to be a tzeda issue. So if they can fly, so then why wouldn't we think that they flew away and other ones came? I mean, birds are certainly easily going to fly away and other birds come in. So why would the Mishnah say, well, I didn't see any other birds around, so these are undoubtedly those birds. That's weird. So we got to be talking about birds that are hopping birds. They're still too young to really fly. So then I got a question for you. Because if there is another pigeonhole and it's within 50 amot, so then birds can actually hop for 50 amot psychologically. Because like this, we have this klal that in the same way that in Williamsburg, people will not walk further away than the shul at the end of the block. So the same thing is true of a pigeon will not walk away from the pigeonhole further away than 50 amas. But if there is another pigeon, so then within 50 amas, so how do you know they didn't move? And if there isn't any pigeon there, so obviously it's mutter, because where would it have come from? You're telling me there was no other bird that could have reached there. So then, and we're still talking about a hopping bird, and there was no hopping bird within 50 amas, how the heck did they get there? And it's very posh because Maruk Vuparchama said that Kol Hamidadeh, a hopping bird that cannot fly, will never go further than 50 amos from the nest. Now, this is really very similar to your one-year-old. Now, they pretend to be leaving, but they keep looking behind to make sure that you're within 50 amos, right? Once you're not within 50 amos, you say, okay, bye-bye. All of a sudden, they come running back home. The same thing is true about the pigeon. So they come running back home once they hit the 50 amos. So what's the explanation? Answers the Gemara. There is another cane, but it's within 50 amos. However, it's around the corner. Now, did you ever turn the corner to see whether anybody lives down on the other side? Who knows what's around the corner? Are you kidding? When I've got a comfortable pigeonhole right here to go around the corner? So as I was talking about over here, it's going to kind of the Karens of it. So you might have thought that since Lamaisa, they're within 50 amos, so then you would have to worry that one of them came from the other one, and that would explain why we have this bird here. Kamashmalan, that here we do not have to worry, because it is not just a function of 50 amos. It's a psychological issue. And once you're not going to go 50 amos, you will definitely not turn the corner. So the bird is going to keep looking back to make sure that mommy still has her eyes on him, right? So therefore, if you could turn around and still see your comfy tenement, so then you don't mind continuing to hop. But if you're going to try to turn the corner, then you'll realize, oh my gosh, I'm out of sight of my tenement, and you will not go on. And therefore, there are all of these different cases which come to tell us where we have to be cheshesh, where we don't have to be cheshesh, and to become great experts, not into this, only in the psychology of the guy who's going to be taking the birds to eat, but in the psychology of the birds themselves, and to note the many similarities.